Hi everyone, this is Melanie Gabby and I'm bridging psychology and spirituality. So this is part two of a conversation I started yesterday with stress. So of course, stress is something that we can experience all year round. But in particular, what I'm looking at the moment is the holiday season. So just to recap a little bit, I'm Mel Gabby and I've been working in the mental health and wellbeing field for over 25 years. I originally trained as a psychotherapist, but I don't practice anymore. I went into designing and developing projects and programs that support mental health and wellbeing. I've just recently finished a program for women who experience domestic abuse. So that's at the sort of high end in terms of trauma and stress. So I'm looking at the way that sort of we can experience day-to-day life and the challenges that we have going on, but also particular points in the year. And as you know, at the moment, the holiday season is upon us and there's lots of different things going on. So in the previous talk that I did, if you haven't heard that yet, you'll know that that was covering stress. And what I looked at in that was not only what is stress, how does it affect us, but the kind of things that we can start to think about when we are experiencing that. So I'm just going to do a little bit of a recap to get people thinking about what is stress, but in particular, what does it mean to you? How does it affect you? So initially, if you think about stress, it's well known that it's a biological and psychological response. And we experience stress when we start to feel under threat or we don't feel we've got the resources to deal with some of the issues that we're facing at that time. And it can be an internal or an external factor. But fundamentally, humans are meant to survive as a species and evolve. And part of the way that they do that is through the brain, and the brain's job is to scan the environment on a moment-to-moment basis and see if there's any threats out there. If it perceives anything as a threat, sometimes this is often out of our conscious awareness, the brain will start to signal to the body that it needs to release some chemicals to get the body moving. And that's what we call fight or flight. So usually in times of stress, especially in big things, you know, if you're walking on the street and a car rolls past you, you're about to step in front of that. You know, your body will release all those stress chemicals and get you moving, get you reacting. And so often it can be useful in short bursts and is helpful for us to understand that stress as a biological, psychological function is something that does help us survive. The problem with experiencing stress is that when we start to experience it in long term, it can have an effect on us physically. It can induce illness. A lot of the research is showing now that behind a lot of illness preceding that was stress in the background. So just some quick sort of references to what you might notice when you're experiencing stress. So once the chemicals are coursing through the body, the body is often forced to act. Sometimes though, we may feel like fighting or we may feel like moving. And often stress is associated with big things like exams, divorce, death of a loved one, moving house, loss of job, issues with work, relationship issues. And sometimes we can perceive that that is a stress that we're expecting, you know, that maybe that there's a family wedding, there's a lot to do and we're happy about the event. But it can be that, you know, over time we can get overwhelmed with the responsibilities because we have to manage our day-to-day lives and everybody needs to earn a living, go out and find some food. If they've got kids, get the kids to school, nursery, you know, pay bills, all of the day-to-day stuff. So this is about how things affect us on a day-to-day level. So, of course, stress will increase your heart rate, increase your breathing capacity because it has to take in that oxygen. But often we'll find that we can't think properly when we're stressed because we're not using the front part of our brain. We're in the amygdala now and that's what's firing off the fight or flight response. So if you want to look at that on a deeper level, have a look at the HPA axis, it's called. It's how the hypothalamus is stimulated, what happens to the adrenal glands, how cortisol and adrenaline and non-adrenaline is released in the body, and what the process is in that. Because the more we understand what happens to us on a physiological, emotional, psychological level, the more we're able to find some tools that can help us either in short bursts or longer bursts of activity that that we can be experiencing. So, for example, if you're at work and you've got deadlines, you know, I've been in the position where I've been managing multiple projects and having to feedback on those projects at the same time, and then I've got to pull all that information together. So I've certainly experienced moments of stress when my children were little. One of them was sick a lot, so I was in and out of hospital while I was studying. And that was a massively stressful time because, as a parent, you know, when your kids are sick, watching them suffer and trying to manage day-to-day life is incredibly taxing. So my heart always goes out to the actual role of trying to be a parent on a day-to-day level, let alone when you've got some of those other factors that are outside of your control. So the body also responds to what we think. So as much as that information that's coming in from the environment that alerts our system as to whether there's danger or not, a lot of how we think can influence whether or not we get stressed unnecessarily, or we prolong the stress, or it's very difficult for us to recover from it, because there's a whole range of psychological factors involved in our personality, our identities, experiences that we've had, whether we've had any adverse childhood experiences that have impacted us. Sometimes we activate stress and we can feel irritated and anxious but don't really know why, and it can be to do with past experiences. So it's sometimes a complex problem, but sometimes some simple steps can at least give you that sense that you're starting to be able to get life into more manageable chunks. So the reason I say chunks is sometimes what we have to do is look at our life as chunks of time. So I know that when my child was sick, he was 2 years old, he was rushed into hospital several times. And I often, on a very basic level, as much as I worried about him and I was in a panic and I was trying to not worry him and get him stressed, if I knew that if I was on top of things in the house and I had some food in the cupboard and the bills were paid, that certainly made a difference. And that's related, if anyone's heard of it, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So if you want to look up who Maslow is, he's been around a long time, or the concept, I should say, has been around a long time. And it's about some of the basic needs that we have that we need to have covered. And it helps us that if we've got our baseline needs, housing, warmth, food, love, people who care for us, a sense of meaning and purpose, that can help us throughout life when we're having moments. Because, of course, everyone will have periods of time in their life where they start to feel stress. So the next part to think about is our thoughts are crucial in these times. But if you're in an emergency and in a crisis, it's fight or flight. It's deal with it, work out what you need to do to get you and anyone around you into a sense of safety. If you're in a crisis and it's your mental health and you feel in a crisis, you've got to reach out and get some support. And I'm going to reiterate this probably in every podcast that I do, because I've worked in mental health field for a long time. You either need some pretty cool people around you that you can touch base with, whether that's a really good friend that will just listen to you when you're in a crisis and you can calm down enough to get some sense of empowerment back, sense of hope back, feel heard, listened, validated. If you haven't got people around you like that, or some of the people around you are causing some of the stress because it's either toxic or damaging relationships, or friends that are too busy talking about themselves, and you need that space, or it's hard for you to ask for support, reach out to any one of the organizations that have people. In the UK, we've got Samaritans, they're 24/7, and I used to work for them when I originally started in this field, which 27 years ago. I did a few worked for them for a couple of years, but I used to work on their shifts. And you know, people often call in with a whole range of issues, and they're there basically to listen, and people underestimate the power of being heard and listened to, because so many of us struggle with holding what we're feeling inside. So reach out and either get any of the free services around if you've got some spare cash, and a lot of people are really struggling with the cost of living at the moment, are having to pull the purse strings back in. Then go and see a coach if you've got some focus, if you know what it is you want to do and you want some help getting some clarity with that. Go and see a therapist, especially if it's around grief. Sometimes we need to talk through things time and time again. That's part of the grief process. So reach out, get some support. Don't be ashamed of doing that. I'm a therapist and I've reached out several times when my kids have gone through things. I've gone through things in my own family, you know, when I've lost people, because there are times when you need to get outside of your own brain almost. Because if you're stressed, it's like your brain is just in that active state of keeping you safe and alive, basically. So sometimes stress can be, you know, a few minutes, it can be the day, it can be a week. And one of the issues with that is if it's prolonged and you keep experiencing that, it will tax you, you know. And the more that your energy in your system is taxed, the resources that you've got depletes, the harder it is for you sometimes to come back round and bounce back. And I certainly know there's a couple of periods in my life where I've been in major stress, where I've had the rug pulled several times, and it was big stuff like housing, work, projects come to an end, no money was coming in, had small children, and I would get really stressed. And then when the issues have been resolved, I'm thinking I'm going to bounce back, and I didn't. You know, I spent months sometimes just really needing to sleep a lot. So people who are falling asleep at work, you know, constantly falling asleep, have no energy. You know, it's that blend of getting the right amount of sleep, the right amount of rest, and getting some exercise. Even if that's just because what happens if you get a bit stuck psychologically, emotionally, you need to shift. It's almost like you need to shift and get your blood flowing, get the body moving. It's a trick. It's learning how to learning what works for you, but also doing regular reviews to see if what you're applying is working. But in the moment of let's move out of, right, we're not in a state of crisis, we're not in an emergency, but it's day-to-day stress, it's work issues, it's family issues, relationship issues. So when stress arises, we can sometimes just feel totally disempowered. And when you don't feel like you've got any control over anything that's happening, that can actually plunge you into a deeper state. So often human beings, we need to have a sense of control or some sense that we're going to get through this. That's why when we're going through a stressful period, it's really useful to look back at other times when we're being stressed and think about how long did we experience that stressful for that particular event. Even if the situations have changed now, that you at some stage got through that. And even if it's really hard to find things that you've done where you got through that challenge, got over that obstacle. You went for that job and you were scared and stressed and anxious. And then, you know, and then you got that and you learned how to do it and the stress dissipated and you got a sense of capability and competency. So there are times in our lives that we need to look back on and go, where did I feel like that? And where did I get through that? And how did I get through that? What did I do that made a difference? Because there will always be different stressors around. And sometimes it is those external stressors. And sometimes it's internal stresses. It's the thoughts that we have, circular, negative thinking. You know, I've been doing this work for a long time and I still struggle when I start to get negative thinking cycle, because I just grew up in a family where a lot of the world was seen through a negative lens. So partly it's my personality, my astrological sign, my, you know, it's the planets moving in whatever directions, it's the news that's on the TV. It's all of these different factors that influence who I am. And yet, even though I'm very self-aware, I still can get locked into a certain way of thinking. So it's sort of why I've done so much research and practiced so many different things, because fundamentally, I have to say, do I like feeling like this? No. How do I want to feel? And that's the key thing I go back to. How do I want to experience life? How do I want to feel? Now, when the children were small, I didn't have the luxury of even having time to think like that, I have to admit. And as time went on, thankfully, I had a very good mother-in-law who would have the kids once a week. And that was my wind down time. Back then when I drank, I'd have a glass of wine. I'd watch some comedy on TV. I used to love Friends and Frasier and all the comedy shows back to back. And that was my indulgence in things that at the time, without consciously thinking about it, brought down my stress and give me a sense of, oh, I'm getting some of my needs met. Because all human beings have needs. And those needs at that time when I had small children was space to think, space to put a drink down, a space to make what I wanted to eat, a space to have the living room looking like tidy for at least a day before they got back and had their toys everywhere and I had to rush from one nursery to the next. So the other thing with stress is if we go through life cycles and, you know, how I experience life in my 20s was very different to how I experienced it in my 20s to 30s and then 30s to 40s. And when my youngest son went to university, it was probably where I really got a sense of, oh, being able to breathe a bit more and not worry so much about them. They were starting to develop their own sense of being in the world and they were getting around their issues and I wasn't having to be so involved with everything. So we experience stress in different ways over the course of our life. And I think what I'm noticing, because I'm in my 50s now, is that even though you might feel more confident and competent in the work that you do, sometimes you do come to a stage of life where you're like, okay, I've been doing this for all this time. I managed my life in this way because I had children, I had a family, I had a partnership, you know, and that's the way it was. But now I'm thinking, okay, so what else is out there? What's meaning, purpose? What do I want? Or how do I, you know, I've been trying these things for a while. Do I bring in something new? And then anything new, like any new situation coming in, can start to bring up those old feelings that have been dormant. You know, we might have been riding the flow of things being okay for a while, and then we get a bit bored and we are relaxed and it's like, okay, what next? So it depends on your personality, depends on how you view life, it depends on what's going on in your life. But the crux of it usually for me is when you're feeling okay, that's like what? And when you're not feeling okay, that's like what? So today, rather than looking at the wider scope of mental health and well-being, I thought I'd focus on the stress because it's holidays. I actually spoke to all the family this year, my children, because they're grown up men now, and said, you know, the cost of living, the heat in the UK, the heating, the lighting, the food, everything has gone up exponentially. And like a lot of people, my wages have gone down, or, you know, we've not had pay rises. So I've said to the kids, rather than everybody get stressed about having to find the perfect present or a present at all, I said, I want to keep it simple. To me, part of how I keep my sense of peace, tranquility, which I can feel them on a day-to-day basis, but part of how I do that is about how I've simplified my life as well. So it's, what do I need on a day-to-day basis as a human being? What do I need to do to bring in some kind of finance to pay for the things, you know, that give us lighting and heating and food? And then where do I, you know, seek to have fun, experience joy? But I didn't want them to feel that pressure either, and said, look, I'm going to do it simple, one small gift each. And also that just meant rather than me, now I don't really rush around the shops and I'm not really big on shopping, but this, you know, there's only so much you can do online. And it is nice to see things and not have to return loads of stuff after the holidays. So in the UK, and I imagine America, so I did spend some time in America think it was 2011 when we went to New York and experienced Christmas over there, Christmas and New Year. But at this time of the year, there's some great things about this time of the year, and there are some really challenging things about this time of the year. And what we know that if you're already experiencing some concerns around your mental health and well-being, then that can be exacerbated, because it may be that financially you've been impacted. It may be that you've changed locations. You're finishing at uni, but you're not staying with your family, or that you're alone this Christmas, or that you've broken up and you haven't got the children. So there are some real challenges for people. So it's how do we face the reality of the challenges? Because I am all about being realistic, but I also like to play with some of the tools that I've learned over the years that help not just see me through and help me help other people see themselves through difficult periods of their lives, but also to increase the feelings that I want to feel. And it is always that balance. When I talk about mental health and well-being, I normally look at things on a continuum. You know, so the continuum, if you have a really long line and you drew that on your wall, on one end you put okay, on the other end you put not okay. So stress usually moves up and down that continuum, because we can have low level stress, we can have a bit of irritability, a bit of distraction, you know, and if you experience anything like ADHD, or even suspect you're on that spectrum at all, you know, then focus and attention are going to be particularly challenging anyway. But throw stress into the mix. I know I struggle to sit down for more than 5 minutes sometimes when I'm overwhelmed and can't get attention. And I've noticed that fighting myself to try and write that report, get that bit of work out the way, as much as I tell myself I've only got an hour or a day to sort something out, sitting there doing that is counterproductive. So I've been looking at what are the ways that we can also be more productive when we need to. So this is about everyone and every level, every sector of society that you come into contact with information or experiences that will just be more taxing. So it's the holiday period. It's bitterly cold where I live. I'm near London. We've had snow. A lot of people get excited when they see the snow. I don't. I get stressed because I don't like driving in it. And I've had to change my travel plans a few times over the last few weeks. Luckily, I've had the flexibility and freedom in order to do that. And I've had friends that I was able to stay with. So I was able to say, right, do I drive home in the dark with the snow pouring down and won't be able to see the road? Or have I got another option? So what are the options you have to think about? That's going back to that sense of control. We know that in mental health research, one of the key things is feeling like you've got some level of control. Even that is just deciding what jumper you're going to wear, what boots you're going to, you know, some level of control over your life and your environment can feel a lot more empowering than feeling disempowered and out of control. So when you feel out of control and overwhelmed, you've certainly got to deploy some tactics to bring you back. So as much as I am going to talk about some of the different ways that we can cope and some of the tools that we can use when we're going through a particularly challenging time periods. And I think one of the things I used to sort of struggle with when I haven't worked in an office now since early 2019, was when everybody used to get excited about office parties, for example. Well, I'm kind of extrovert when I choose to be, because I've delivered training, you know, I've taught yoga, I've managed workshops, spoke at conferences, but I'm actually incredibly introvert. And to me, that means there's only so much time I can do the social stuff. And then I like to get home and I like time on my own, or I like to read and I like to reflect. And it's how I fill up my cup almost. You know, if you looked at your life in terms of the energy that you have, and you had a jug of water and that represented your energy, a lot of the time I think mine's only ever half full anyway. So I've got to be really mindful how I use that energy. Where am I putting my focus and attention? But going back to sort of this time of the year, they'd all be talking about the office parties. I never really used to get excited about those, going to eat in any restaurants, being in the cold. I was a bit of a, you know, is it a Grinch that people call you if you're not you know, living up, getting really excited about all the social events. Some people love that. When you don't, though, it can feel difficult when you're part of an office environment that really celebrates and wants everybody to get out and spend time together. And often with people that maybe, and we often feel that, don't we? Would we choose to spend time with that person if we weren't working together? So one of the ways I got around that is I used to set myself a goal of finding out the most interesting thing I could about people I was coming into contact with, because in the office we shared, you know, we enjoyed maybe doing the work together. So I worked with a lot of clinical staff, so I got psychologically, you know, the intellectual stimulus that I needed in the daytime so that I could defrag and watch some rubbish TV, comedy or whatever in the evening. So I'd set myself a task, but there was one year when I went to many office parties because I decided to do the yes game and take people up on the offers, and then decided after that one year that I was never going to go to any Christmas dinners again at work because I found it was expensive, the food was awful most of the time, and I didn't necessarily enjoy it. But it was an experience, and life is about experience. And when we can move out of a polarized state of, you know, either feeling really not okay or feeling really okay, when we're in that sort of transition and look at life outside of that polarity, we can just say, hey, this is an experience. But it's hard to do that when you're feeling stress. When stress has been activated in the system and the chemicals are coursing through your body, you know, and your body's, it's agitated and it wants to move because that's what the chemicals do. They get you moving. So if you haven't got an emergency and there is nowhere for you to be or a report in the next hour, if that stress has been activated because your old pattern of thinking style has come in and you've said, I can't do this, I'm no good at this job, why did I take it? I'm not a good parent, I've done it again, you know, all of that sort of negative thinking cycle. And by the way, we all have it. And I've been a therapist, I'm not practicing now, but I did for about 18 years. And we all do it. You know, therapists aren't always that further ahead than their clients. We just know how to hold the space and give someone the space to talk about what they need and give them what they need, hopefully, most of the time in those sessions. Although I have to say I've read Quora quite a lot, and there is a lot of dissatisfied clients out there. Anyway, moving that one swiftly along, some of the things that can happen to you is you won't necessarily feel like you're running around like a headless chicken, but you may feel distracted. You may shut down. I know that's one of my coping mechanisms. A lot of people who suffer with depression, they'll shut down, they'll remove themselves. They won't open the front door. They won't pick up the phone. Longer term, that's not great. And if you're a friend of someone like that, it's not personal. It's their coping style. And sometimes all you got to do is send a message and touch base and say, hey, how you doing? I've been thinking about you. I don't know how you're getting on, but, you know, I'm just touching base to say hi. If you've got a friend like that, please do that, because I know people that have been like that. That has made all the difference in the world. Some people will tap more into their spirituality. You know, it may be that you pray, you meditate, you know, you take up a more healthy practice. I certainly know that when I took up yoga, well before I trained as a yoga teacher, I think I've been doing yoga now for about 10 years and meditation for as long, that when I started to experience that, I started to notice that with that practice, how quickly I could start to relax and feel a sense of peace. I remember when I first started to experience it, it was quite odd. And that's what motivated me to carry on doing that. So a lot of the tips that I share with people is because I was motivated to just become still. And especially when you're running ragged with the children and you know, you're going from place to place, and I don't know about you, but I certainly had moments where I was like, oh, take me off to a desert island. And I think I did actually one year. I think my mother and I think
my husband and mother-in-law both had the children, and I was just desperate to go and have a week and stay in a hotel somewhere, because I had so many different things going on. I'd been studying, working hard, managing projects, and I just got to this state of wanting to go into a dark room and stay there for a bit. And I did do that actually for a few days. I think it was about 3 days before I even went down and found the beach. But that is because I let things get too far. And one of the reasons that I'm motivated to do the podcasts, to when I do the workshops, when I work with people, it doesn't matter what the thing is that I'm doing, but I'm just motivated to help people think about what are some of the simple things that you can do. Doesn't always have to be drastic, so that the stress doesn't build up and it doesn't get worse. Because I think sometimes we suffer way more than we should. And with just some simple tools that we can deploy, that can make all the difference. So there are lots of different things that people can try. But I guess the first thing I say to people, okay, so if I say to you, what is stress? And if you've got a journal today or you listen to the podcast, stop it, get your journal out. You know, if this is a recording that you're listening to, and then write in there, what is stress? What does stress mean to me? Then write, how do I experience stress? What do I notice? Is it physical? Do you feel agitated? Do you lose concentration? Do you start getting stressed? What is it that you start to notice? And then write on the left-hand page of the journal all the things that you would define as stressing you out. And then we don't want to stay there too long, because even though I'm into yoga and meditation and a very spiritual person, it's not all about love and light. It's about the reality of life. And the reality of life is really tough sometimes. And so write on the left-hand page all the things that you perceive as stressing you out. You know, your partners, parents, a particular person. I think we've all had someone at work. I definitely work with a couple of narcissists. I know that. And they are tricky to work with. And I'm not making light of that. But thankfully, I'm at the other end of that journey. And on the right hand side, anything that you could do for each of those situations. And if you're not sure, one of the beautiful things, and this is why I keep going back to meditation, and even just not meditation, mindfulness, where you sit and you just breathe and you just focus on your breath. Now, Abraham Hicks, if anyone's listened to Abraham Hicks and Esther Hicks over the years, consistently go back to, sometimes there's noise in your environment. I live about 10 miles away from Heathrow Airport. So having a completely peaceful environment is rare, but there are moments in the day. But if you do hear a noise like the air conditioning or a plane go over, purposely utilize that, tune into it and notice it. Because the moment you take your attention away from the thoughts, the experiences that are stressing you out, and you put your focus there, it's starting to teach the brain that you can almost unlock, unstick that circular thinking. Because if you've grown up in an environment, and I certainly did, my mom suffered with depression and had migraines, and there was all sorts of issues when we were growing up, that we sort of grew up with that negative lens. And if you've grown up with a negative lens where, you know, you're taught not really to enjoy being excited and joyous, but where maybe there's more depression or introvertness, or you spend a lot of time on your own, or you've had real difficulties as a kid, you know, those things don't ever completely leave you. Because, and then what you've got to do is really practice. And I'm talking about consistently try something, not give up, and go, right, I am determined that I'm going to be happier, healthier, wealthier, whatever the phrase is that you want to use, and start deploying some tactics. So tune in, use that mindful moment if you get it, 5 minutes in the morning. If the kids have gone to school and you're at home, 5 minutes. If you're at work, take a break. Clearly, it's difficult if you're a nurse or your teacher or a courier. But the concept is that rather than saying, I have to sit there, I think sometimes people who practice meditation will say you have to sit there for an hour or 2 hours. Well, you've got to be fairly limbered up anyway for your body to sit there for that amount of time without feeling a hell of a lot of discomfort. So set yourself a goal, if you've not done it before, to just start to focus on your breathing, or on a sound. Sometimes you can watch a candle, you can light a candle and just watch the flame. And every time your attention is drawn back to the thoughts, take your attention back to the flame, to the sound. So even if I just said that now, what do you notice? So at the moment, hopefully you're listening to me and you're not being distracted by lots of different things. That's the first step. So in your journal, when you've sat down, I tend to do something every day in my journal. The process of writing they found in research really is much more different than typing things on a laptop. And it's a way, it's almost like saying to your subconscious mind, okay, I'm ready to allow this information to flow. And equally, when you start to practice, and this has been my experience over the years, when you start to practice the meditation, initially at first, you may just think, this is uncomfortable, it's not working, and I can't stop these monkey thoughts racing around in my head. I've never stopped them, but they do slow down. And there are other times where I get completely overwhelmed. So it depends on what phase of the day and what's going on for me. So today I'm more calm. You know, I've done some yoga, I've done some meditation already. I can feel it in my system. So my thoughts are slower. I can notice what's going on and they don't get so pervasive. Sometimes if you've got depression or anxiety, thoughts are much more pervasive. It's part and parcel of those experiences that people have, and they don't have to be permanent. Everyone will experience some anxiety, depression, low mood, some level of mental health concerns at some stage. Doesn't mean to say you've got a mental health condition that's diagnosable, but we will all go through life phases that sometimes just tip us further towards that point on the continuum of not feeling okay. So back to the meditation and mindfulness. If you've not done it before, focus on your breath. Notice your breath right now. Where is it? Is it in your chest? Is it in your stomach? And start listening to something on YouTube. There's some beautiful music on there. You can even put in frequency healing music, chakra healing music, nighttime music for a restful sleep. Nighttime is a great time to actually start to practice mindfulness and meditation, because sometimes what I do, I tend to wake up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. Waking up at 3, I don't want to get up. 4 o'clock, I don't want to get up either. So I might lay there and I will now focus on my breath, take my attention, and I imagine that the breath is coming in calmly like a wave and going out like a wave. And I bring that energy up through my body and out from my body. I've noticed now I get back to sleep much faster. I started doing that about 6 months ago. I was clearly going through something that I can't remember at the time, and I needed to deploy that even more, because if I get up at 4 or 5 o'clock, you know, like a lot of people, it's very difficult to maintain. I could when I was in my 20s, but not so much now. And that's the reality. You know, it's like knowing who you are. So there is a wealth of information about what is stress, what is mental health, top tips for managing stress. But like I said, when you write in your journal, what is stress? How does it affect me? When you think about that, you might be thinking about the really obvious things. You might think, oh, well, I reached for some alcohol, I reached for the cheesecake. Not bad in isolated moments, not good as a long-term strategy. Or you might realize that you were trying to do that report and you now are aware that you've got this persistent way of thinking, and that is what activates your stress. So write in your journal all the things that you think stress you out and then the things that you can do. So going back to the holidays, what I decided to do was dedicate one day to getting the presents that I decided to get for people. I kept it simple and I went out and I did that. And it was a brilliant feeling at the end of the day. I don't like rushing around. I find crowds tiring. So if you equally find that some things can just dissipate your energy really quickly, what can you do? What strategy can you deploy? Do you go to the shops earlier? Do you go on a different day? I certainly know before we had the pandemic, I used to go food shopping about 6:30 in the morning. I was awake, the shops were open, and I could go and do the whole week shopping. Of course, I used to always forget something, but it was a strategy that I deployed to manage stress, because the last thing I wanted to do was take two small children with me to go shopping. And when they're tired and hungry, Everybody has a bad day. So it's how can I prevent that? So for me, it's always about what are the things that you need to do that can help you manage your life on a day-to-day basis. So you've wrote it in your journal, and now on the next page, what have you done in the past that has helped you when you've been going through stressful periods? So think about, was there a particular person that was great? And what made them really helpful? Did they listen? Did they provide support? If you were moving house, did they actually help you move stuff? What about at work? All of us have gone into a job at some stage and loved the idea of when we've gone for it, and then you're there and you're brand new. And this happened to me recently, actually, is I was asked to go and take on a new program of work. And it was the first time I'd walked into an office since 2019. I was a little bit overwhelmed, but on the plus side, I really liked the environment. It was a brand new sort of funky office with furniture that I liked. It made sense. The only thing is, it was open plan, so the noise levels were high, but everyone was really friendly. But I was like, okay, how can I pace myself for now walking into a situation that I've not been into for a long time? Because some people are quite noise sensitive and sensitive to light. You know, certain times of the day, the light can interfere with your thought process or be irritating. So on that next page, you're writing, what kind of things help me? What do I already do? So if you exercise, what exercise do you do? How long do you do it for? And what do you notice? Do you come out feeling really like you've achieved something? Does it feel good? Do you have those feel-good chemicals coursing through your body? How long does that last? Because the tip with exercise, of course, again, is balance. If you've meditated, what kind do you do? Silent meditation? Do you listen to music? Do you do a course? There's a couple of people out there whose stuff I really like, but I've gone through phases over the year. I currently listen to someone called Tom Evans, the playwright, and he's wrote quite a few books, and he also has lots of free material on Insight Timer and on his website. And he dabbles in the esoteric, but he was originally a BBC broadcaster. And this was a new stage of his life where he started to evolve into the esoteric world. But I really like, he's created a lot of meditations for people who are in the corporate world. So he does like 5 minute and 10 minute ones. And I've done some of his longer ones, but he also started to produce music. And it's really key if you like music, to find something that you can naturally start to feel relaxed to. So what you expose yourself to will either be supportive of your nervous system or irritate your nervous system. And lots of things we're finding out in trauma research, for example, that lots of people do experience almost like a fatigued nervous system. What we find with chronic fatigue, not in all cases, but in certain cases with people, it's prolonged stress over a long period of time and sometimes past trauma that has led them to start to experience chronic fatigue, sort of a symptomology. There's different views around that at the moment because it's a much newer sort of health condition that's come up on the radar in the last few years. So if you are feeling depleted and fatigued, and that is a continuous thing, that's your body's way of saying you need good sleep. You need sleep hygiene. Before you go to bed at night, you need to be not thinking about everything that went wrong. Please, if anything you're going to get from today, when it comes to bedtime, I want you to either dream, like focus on all the things that if you were a millionaire, you would do, or you would be. You'd be walking your dog, be walking by the beach, you'd be in the forest, you'd be running your own business. Focus on the things that are going to give you that sense of feeling really good, not on what went wrong. Use the daytime. If you're someone who likes to worry all the time, as I used to say with a lot of the teenagers that I worked with, have a time in the day where you're allowed to worry, where you write down the things that worry you, put it in another page of your journal, and then leave it there. But not at night, not before bed. For some people, a good soak in the bath, a good shower, you know, clean bed linen, relaxing music, maybe meditating, lying down and doing some flowing breath, and focusing on just your breathing. If your mind's really busy, switch your mind. It's hard to stop off the rain of thoughts. If you've got a relationship that's a bit wonky and things are going on, write down the conversation and don't start texting after. I say don't. I don't really like using the word don't, but I just think some things are critical in terms of what can disrupt any, you know, I can be in a really peaceful state and all I've got to do is have something come in from someone that might have just caught me at a bad moment, and then I start thinking about it. And you have to be really really like tough with yourself and say, right, I'm not even going to look at my phone. I say to people now, when it gets to, you know, maybe 9 o'clock at night, because I like to read, I like to watch inspirational videos, or I like to do stuff around the work that I'm doing, I'm not being rude, but I'm not going to carry on texting, because they want a conversation and I want to focus on what I'm doing. So have a look at how you currently cope. Now, if you're using drugs or drinking alcohol and it's on a serious level, do research that and get some support with that, because it's hard to just remove something completely out of your life. What you normally need to do is start to increase behaviours and activities that are supportive, because sometimes old patterns die hard, but they will start to dissipate when we've started to increase some of the things that just make us feel good. I saw this with a lot of the kids that I worked with. Those that had activities that made them feel good, even when they were going through crises, it wasn't prolonged, and they didn't develop or sustain negative coping mechanisms. Now, there's all sorts of, I'm not going to give a personal opinion about what support I think works. I'm into yoga and meditation, as I've said. I've got into sound healing recently, because all you have to do is lie there and you listen to some really great sounds and vibrations. You feel them all over your body. And I get into a really deep sense of meditation relaxation. And that will stay with me for a few days. So that is one of the, we're using words like self-care now, but I think it's just those well-being habits that we start to think about. So on your next page of your journal, what well-being habits have you got? What things support your well-being? What you do for yourself, what you do with other people. And then we're going to have 2023 approaching soon. And what I, if I'm coaching people, what I'd normally say is, you know, every Saturday or Sunday, sit down when you've got 5-10 minutes, unless you're rushing around with small children and taking them to rugby football practice all weekend, but try and make some time where you get your journal out and you go, right, okay, what one thing am I going to do this week that's fun? What one thing am I going to do that makes me feel good, that I like reading, that I like watching, whatever that is? So start putting them in slowly. I started doing that around, I think it was around 2014-15, highly stressed at work, so I had to counteract that. Because remaining in that state, as I've said, long term affects health conditions. So that's about sort of evaluating where you're at. The Sundays are about now starting to think about, this is where I'm at and this is where I might want to go. So where do you want to go? What do you want to experience that week? One of the cool things I like doing now is I wake up in the morning, because the negative thinking cycles aren't so pervasive in my brain. I can wake up and say, okay, what kind of day do I want to have? You know, because when I go out, if I go shopping, you know, there's so many people out there that are also stressed. And you can see them running around and they're like not even making eye contact. But there's also people out there that are really struggling. So I try and make it where, you know, I'm going to smile at someone, hold open a door, say thank you. And it is irritating when people constantly walk past you like you're invisible. I've got a friend that drives them to be really irritated when we're shopping. I'm like, but this is because there's something going on in. So we have to have some understanding and compassion. But equally, we have to have that understanding and compassion for ourselves. So in your journal, going back to your journal again, write it down. If you struggle to write, get your phone out, the record button on your phone, and record these things. Because it's like, again, it's like getting it out there. It's getting it out there so that the subconscious mind can start doing the proper work of bringing forth ideas and activities that support you on the next stage of your, whether you call it your spiritual or your human evolution, however you view yourself in the world. It's a process. We sort of know this in art therapy. I used to employ an art therapist on my team. And it's something about bridging the unconscious and the conscious. In your conscious mind, it's all the things you kind of are aware of right now. But if you get stuck in just thinking about those things, you're not really opening the door to some of the other magic that exists in life that you might be drawn towards, but you won't see it if you're so locked in your stress and these things that are going on. So going back to the holidays, okay, we're approaching the weekend. So set some time to one side and think about, okay, how do I feel about the holidays? Is it stressful? Is it a mix? Am I looking forward to seeing, you know, Auntie Dot and Uncle Ted? Or is there a family event that I'm going to? So how can I, what's a way of managing those events rather than going in thinking like preempting the it's sort of like that stage talk, you know, you're preempting the lines that everyone's going to have and things that people are going to say. And I certainly know that I had some soft spots when I used to go visit my mother-in-law. There were certain things she would say that I could just feel my tension increasing because I'm human. So I would preempt when I used to take the kids over there. How am I going to manage this? So I spent less time there in a way that was manageable for me. And I would focus on sharing stuff to do with the children. But it's not always possible with certain family members. Sometimes some people divorce their family for a while. And then when they feel ready to get back into the swing of some of that, will then re-engage. And if you feel that everything is really difficult and you're not going to keep yourself together and your finger on your pulse, then sometimes that's what you have to do. Otherwise, create a strategy. Now, thankfully, I'm quite happy because now my son has a girlfriend and a baby. I've not had to cook Christmas dinner for the last 3 years. That has made me incredibly happy. And I'm very happy to either say, here's some money for the food, or I will make a dish, because there's certain dishes I can make. But his partner is an excellent cook. Equally, I don't expect to pander to the needs of everybody else. And it is a balance to strike. You know, in effect, I'm a mother-in-law. And I don't want to be like my previous mother-in-law in the negative ways that I experienced it. So I'm mindful. But we're not going to get it right all the time. So, but that is something that I love doing. I never used to like driving to people's houses. When I was married early on and the children were small, I liked having Christmas at home where they could run around in their own house and be relaxed doing that. But as you know, like I said earlier, times have changed. So so I've sort of cracked the nut in terms of, okay, what do I need to buy? What things do I need to sort out? Equally, life is uncertain. We don't know what else is going to happen. I can't predict the weather. So you just roll with it as best you can, and you have your stress management techniques in your back pocket should you need them. So first one, as I reiterate, is about being able to breathe. So if you're in someone's house, sometimes that's going to the bathroom, taking some deep breaths and saying to yourself, I'm going to remain calm and at peace and smile my way through this. Because you getting upset and you getting palpitations and you just thinking this is another Christmas with the, you know, whatever your phrase is, and you don't want to experience that, make a different choice. Make a choice to experience it the best way you can. And sometimes, and I've seen this work and I've done it as well, even in situations that I even thought, it's always going to look that way. Sometimes when you make a shift yourself, the world just shifts around you. And I've seen that magic occur a few times. So be a scientist, create a test, try some new strategies and see what happens. You won't always get results straight away, but sometimes you do. So decide how you want to feel. Decide how you're going to, what you're going to take from the holiday period. Some people have a week off. I know a lot of factories close in the UK for a week. So my uncle can just relax and doesn't have any pending deadlines. I worked through last Christmas and the Christmas before because it didn't matter. Those holidays, we had work on the go. I didn't mind too much because I equally have pockets of time where I don't have to work. I have peace and I can balance it out. This year's different. So decide how you want to feel. Decide on what you need to get organized and crack on with it. And if you can't do it in one big chunk, decide how you're going to chunk it over the course of the week. Then, if you haven't done any stress management techniques at all, research a few, try a couple. But I think the breathing is the most key. I think it takes about 3 or 4 breaths for the stress system to turn into the more calming system. It's only about 3 or 4 breaths. But if you're in a constant state of stress, you won't notice that straight away. So you have to practice it. Set intentions when you wake up in the morning. If you're having a shower or a bath, imagine that you are washing off anybody else's negativity, anybody else's thoughts, opinions, anything. If you've got the pervasive thoughts in your head, just try and think of something different. Think of something you're looking forward to that day. Look at a picture you've got on the wall. Put some pictures on your wall that are going to draw you in and make you remember those good times. Anything at all that can stop those thoughts being pervasive. So shower off negativity and then, you know, ask the universe or your higher self or, you know, your internal self that you want to feel good throughout the day. So to help you do that, set that intention. Then sit down, write your list of what you need to do that day, what is definitely something you need to do. And then what are the nice to do's, you know, and if you did it today, it'd save you doing it tomorrow. And then who you would really like to contact this week. Then think about people you've not been in contact with. Are they some of the people that disappear when they get stressed? Send out a couple of texts. I've done it the odd day. I'm not someone who does a lot of conversations through text, but I will send out, you know, almost like a flag that says, hey, how are you doing? What's going on? Are you okay? And then get your journal, get a nice journal if you haven't bought one, get some nice pens and decide that you're going to set at least 5 minutes. If you can do 5 minutes every hour or 2 minutes every hour or 5 minutes at the end of the day, listen to some really nice music. Consistency is more important than the length of time often, because once you start to notice the benefits of the activities that you're doing, your strategy, that will motivate you to continue that. Then you can work on some of the bigger dreams and ideals that you have for yourself. So anyone, if you want to send me any questions around stress, the holidays, anything at all, do send me a note. If there's anything you want to ask, do so. And I'm just thinking what else before we finish the podcast in the next few minutes might help. Okay, so let's have a think. Some of the alternative methods for stress in the short term and long term, as I've said, breathing. I apologize for this now, anyone who's going to listen in to me on other podcasts. I will keep going back to this because actually it's made a huge difference in my life, the breathing and the yoga. And I'll talk more about it in another podcast. But I did have a serious car accident in 2019, and yoga and breath work and some of the other methods that I've deployed since have been actually a big part of my healing journey. It's taken a while. I continue to work mostly. I haven't been able to work in the same way. But I will be diving a bit deeper into some of those more longer term health conditions that when you feel like if anyone's listening now that they've got something, and I think it's always going to be like that. it won't be for everyone. And I really thought it was going to be like that for me. But it's why I'm so passionate about teaching some of the key skills, because even if you're laid up on a bed and you can't really move about because you've either had an accident or you've got an illness or something, there are tactics that you can deploy. If you listen to Joe Dispenza, Bob Proctor, Abraham Hicks, Andrew Huberman, there's lots of people out there that are saying the same thing. It's about how you can use your breath, how you visualize, how you use language, how you manage your thoughts, even if you're lay there and you're too tired to move. And even more important, if you're experiencing depression, low mood, whether that's pervasive and you've had it a long time or something, as we call it in the field, reactive depression, you know, you've just gone through something. If you're going through something right now, my heart goes out to you, because I don't like to hear that people are suffering or in pain and are going through stuff. So do please reach out to any of the organisations that you can access. Sometimes it's about connection. You know, I've met lots of therapists over the years because, of course, I worked in the field of therapy, and I've come into contact with a lot of therapists. Either I've gone to see over particular points in time, or I've worked with or employed, because I teams of therapists working for me as well. And there are some really good ones out there, and there are some that could do with a bit more training. You have to use your discernment. Fundamentally, it's about, do I feel comfortable? And when anyone walks into a therapy situation, you're not going to sit there and tell everyone everything. But I certainly know one of the therapists I did see a few years ago. The moment I walked in, her anxiety was way worse than mine. So I didn't go back for the second appointment, because that wasn't conducive to me feeling less anxious. And then I've met someone who was more alternative in their approach, but his techniques really, and in fact, it was about 6 months after the car accident, because I was having the really bad dreams, and they were waking me up, you know, God, I can't remember the name of them now. And I did have some sessions with him, because I wanted to take the they were really potent, and we used some creative visualization and NLP techniques, and that really, I don't even completely know what his method was, but I felt comfortable with him, and I did that one online, that wasn't face to face. And that really made a difference at the time. Like I said, I'll talk more about what happens when you have some really tough times in life, whether that's, you know, you're going through a really bad breakup, or you've been in toxic relationships, you've experienced domestic abuse, you've had car accidents. You know, I've worked with a range of issues over the years. I'm not about diagnosing anyone who's got a diagnosis. If it's helpful for you, that's what's important. We are not our diagnosis. And equally, there are a whole range of tools and things that we can use, whether we're diagnosed or not, with anything that can help us. So the other aspects that can help, of course, I've been doing yoga. So I do at least 5 or 10 minutes yoga every morning. I do yang some mornings when I feel a bit stronger. This morning, I didn't feel the same, so I did yin yoga, which means holding the poses for more time, and I do about 3 to 5, and then I do some meditation or mindfulness, depends how much I'm able to slow down the thoughts, because over time I actually get creative insights as well when I'm meditating. So sometimes I've got to get a notebook out, write down what's come to me, because that is less known in the field of meditation, but I think it does increase creativity. So yoga is definitely something that can help. If you haven't practiced it ever, you can have a look online. There's no one really I'm going to. I think sometimes you've just got to have a look and think, that looks interesting, I think I'll give it a go. If you haven't done it before, just be mindful about what class you go for. Really do look for something that is beginners. Tai Chi is great. I did do that a few years ago. That really does reduce stress, reduce anxiety, and can improve the mood. There's also Qigong. And I think there's a guy called Holden. I think it's Holden Qigong. He's got stuff on YouTube. He gives out a lot for free. Aerobic exercise. Now, I should be doing more of that, I know, but you know, something to get the heart going a little bit, where you're a little bit breathless, walking, swimming, cycling. So since my back has, I had major back issues since having the car accident, that has made a big difference. But it really was difficult to walk more than more than 500 steps to start with, and now I can do about 7,000 or 8,000 before I've got to do a whole session of stretching again. But like anything else, you know, check with your doctor if you've got any health conditions, and don't force it. If you're going from the couch or the sofa to exercise, you've got to get some support. And I'm going to have a session on how you step your progress in that way at some stage. But some kind of aerobic exercise that gets your heart beating. If you've got a dog, take your dog out. And let's see if I'm going to see Gillian, if I can get you on here. I'm not very good at using this app, so bear with me. Hi. Hello.
My body.